So first of all, I'd like to thank you very much for allowing me to visit your wonderful community. It's a great honor and pleasure to be here. And yes, I have to admit, I feel a little awkward sitting here in front of so many senior devotees. And I usually don't have such an elevated audience, I have to frankly tell you. So, yeah, I definitely am requesting for the blessings of all your wonderful great souls and disciples of Srila Prabhupada, that not only today but over the next few days I'm able to offer some humble service and say of some little meaning and relevance to all of you. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from Canto 1, Chapter 8, Verse Number 5. Sadayitva jata shatru. Sadayitva jata shatru. Swamrajyam kittaveritam. Swamrajyam kittaveritam. Katayitva satoragya. Katayitva satoragya. Kachaspasha kshatayusha. Kachaspasha kshatayusha. Sadayitva chata shatru. Swamrajyam kittaveritam. Katayitva satoragya. Kachaspasha kshatayusha. Ladies. Sadayitva, having executed Ajata Shatra, of one who has no enemy. Swamrajyam, own kingdom. Kitavai, by the clever Duryodhana and Pati. Ritam usurped. Katayitva, having killed. Asataha, the unscrupulous. Ragya, of the queens. Kacha, bunch of hair. Sparsha, roughly handled. Kshata, decreased. Ayushaha, by the duration of life. Translation. The clever Duryodhana and his party cunningly usurped the kingdom of Yudhishthira, who had no enemy. By the grace of the Lord, the recovery was executed, and the unscrupulous kings who joined with Duryodhana were killed by him. Others also died, their duration of life having decreased for their rough handling of the hair of Queen Draupadi. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In the glorious days, or before the advent of the age of Kali, the brahmanas, the cows, the women, the children, and the old men were properly given protection. Point one. The protection of the brahmanas maintains the institution of vana and ashram, the most scientific culture for attainment of spiritual life. Two. The protection of cows maintains the most miraculous form of food, like milk for maintaining the finer tissues of the brain, for understanding higher aims of life. Three. The protection of women maintains the chastity of society, by which we can get a good generation for peace, tranquility, and progress of life. Four. The protection of children gives the human form of life its best chance to prepare the way of liberty from material bondage. Such protection of children begins from the very day of begetting a child by the purificatory process of Garbhadhan Samskar, the beginning of pure life. Five. The protection of the old man gives them a chance to prepare themselves for better life after death. This complete outlook is based on factors leading to successful humanity as against the civilization of polished cats and dogs. The killing of the above-mentioned innocent creatures is totally forbidden, because even by insulting them, one loses one's duration of life. In the age of Kali, they are not properly protected, and therefore the duration of life of the present generation has shortened considerably. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is stated that when the women become unchaste for want of proper protection, they are unwanted children called Vana Sankara. To insult a chaste woman means to bring about disaster in the duration of life. Dushasana, a brother of Duryodhana, insulted Draupadi, an ideal chaste lady, and therefore the miscreants died untimely. These are some of the stringent laws of the Lord mentioned above. Since I'm visiting your community the first time, and many of you I'm meeting for the first time, I thought I'd just take a couple of minutes of introducing myself a little bit. So I am originally from Germany, but I have never lived there as a devotee. I met the devotees in 1985 in Australia, in Sydney, traveling the world looking for a higher purpose of life. And within 1 week, I joined the Brahmacharini Ashram, and I was initiated by Bhavananda, and then later on took initiation of former Pravishnu Swami, now Prabhu, and then I took one more time reinitiation of His Holiness Niranjana Swami. But just as a little comment, all those three personalities were actually the perfect guru at that time. So I have no hard feelings and grief or something. It was all actually perfect in my case. So, and then I was for 4 years in Australia in the Bamachini Ashram in Sydney, getting the basic training of spiritual life. And then I was also married for 10 years. And during my married life, by Krishna's arrangement, we pioneered the first more organized temple in the former Soviet Union, which was a very adventurous time in pioneer work. So, and then 1999, my former husband left Krishna consciousness and remarried a non-devotee and separated again and is out there somewhere. And since then, I'm leading the life of a traveling preacher. And I'm spending 6 months per year in India and Bangladesh, and 6 months per year mainly in Europe, in Ukraine a lot, and Moldova, Croatia, Slovenia. There's so many little countries. And also I started going to Canada a couple of years ago. And this is my very first visit to America, so... And I have two missions in my humble preaching attempts. Mission number one is the Holy Name. I like to conduct Holy Name retreats because I'm firmly convinced that we have to make more efforts to get on deeper levels of chanting. So, and then my second mission is connected actually so much with this purport today, because it is all about spiritual culture. Over the last 18 years, I have every year spent a considerable time in Bangladesh, which is the place to get insights into spiritual culture. It's quite an amazing place. It's East Bengal, where most of Mahaprabhu's eternal associates come from. And because it is a Muslim country, this is actually a blessing in disguise, because it has really preserved our Vaishnav culture there, because the Muslims are not so fond of all the modern Kali Yuga ideas. So that's really has kept our Vaishnav culture really up to this very day alive. And yeah, when I travel there, I feel like I'm entering Chaitanya Charitamrita. There's also no Western devotees living there. I'm only with the locals. I travel with them, I eat with them, I live with them, I preach with them. So, and over the years, I have actually received a complete transformation there. My whole worldview has been put upside down, and I got some little glimpses of how civilized, cultured human life is meant to be lived, actually, according to Krishna's system. So, and yes, over the years this has affected and inspired my preaching and my personal practice also. And 4 years ago, I even made a humble attempt to establish an institute for spiritual culture. I have even brought along some little brochures at the end of the class. If you're interested, you're welcome to take one, because I strongly feel we need some systematic training and education in this topic of culture. So, and since really the purport is all about that, I can't help myself. I have to speak a little bit about this. And already I find it very interesting how Prabhupada starts the purport, that he says, in the glorious days, or before the advent of the age of Kali. So in the glorious days, for me, this indicates, and just the fact how Prabhupada is going through the Bhagavatam again and again, he mentioned so many aspects of this culture that I can't help myself thinking that Prabhupada expects us to revive these glorious days. And as we all know, There's meant to be 10,000 years of the Golden Age, Lord Chaitanya Sankirtan movement. So unless, otherwise, why would Prabhupada spend so much time and energy in such minute details in his purports in the Bhagavatam? He's referring and explaining again and again, tirelessly. So he surely wouldn't do that if this was not of relevance to us. So therefore, I just don't feel satisfied saying, well, today is Kali Yuga and this was the Vedic times and sorry, this will not fit or something. No, I'm convinced that Lord Chaitanya Sankirtan movement will only become really powerful if we in ISKCON, we can actually demonstrate to the world how cultured, civilized human life is meant to be lived. Otherwise, what do we have to show? Actually nothing, just an interesting philosophy. But we have not actually got anything really to show. And at least in Europe, it's like that. There is so many people out there who are looking for an alternative life, an alternative culture, who are really burned out, who realize the way we are going, this is really heading down to hell. People realize. But they don't know where to look for. They don't have access to Krishna's system. But we do. And therefore, I'm convinced that this is what actually Prabhupada expects from us. And I have heard, I don't know if this is a fact, but I've heard Prabhupada disciples quoting that apparently Prabhupada said it will take 10 generations to get there. And I believe it too. Because it just seems in some points we are so far away from Krishna's system that this will take a few generations. And we can see already, you know, I spend every year about 3 months in Mayapur and I give there all different courses and the holy name retreat and so many things. And I know some families there where the next generation is already much closer there to Krishna's system. This is how I like to call our Vaishnava culture. For me, it is Krishna's system, which he has given us in order to create stability and harmony in this world. And we can see, you know, especially when our children grow up in an atmosphere of that culture, then they already get it a little bit more right. And then when their children have children, they get it more right. So gradually, we will, we hopefully will get there. And for myself, I just feel it's so exciting to be some tiny little part of this whole transformational process. So I'd like to begin by just illustrating how does culture come about? So culture comes about by living a certain worldview, by applying an ideology, a philosophy, by practically putting it into practice. And accordingly, in all fields of daily life, culture develops. Materialistic culture as well as spiritual culture. So, and in 269 in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, what is night for all beings is the time of awakening for the self-controlled. And the time of awakening for all beings is night for the introspective sage. So, and this gives us an idea how these two cultures, I mean, Krishna says, what is day to the materialist is night for the introspective sage. So these two cultures are as different as day and night because they're based on entirely different worldviews. Material life is sense gratification, is the all in all. you know, in regards to sense gratification, sex life is the topmost. And in spiritual life, it's the opposite. We try to diminish sense gratification, keep it to a bare minimum, with the ultimate goal of losing the taste altogether. So these cultures are so different. They're actually incompatible, really. They are, let's be honest here. We try to make them fit, but actually they don't. But day and night, there is a transition period in between. There is dusk and dawn. So the process of Krishna consciousness is meant to bring about this transformation, that the day of the materialist eventually becomes our night. If we want to become true spiritualists, if we want to become introspective sages, then the day of the materialist eventually has to become our night. But this is an internal transformation which each and every one of us has to do by themselves. It's internal work. It cannot be imposed. It cannot be forced on people. It can only be inspired. And this is what Krishna consciousness is meant to be all about. And as Prabhupada is saying so nicely here with the polished cats and dogs, where was it? Yes, this complete outlook is based on factors leading to successful humanity as against the civilization of polished cats and dogs. So instead of day of the materialist, we can say polished cats and dogs culture here. And then we have the successful humanity, the civilization for successful humanity. That's the day of the spiritualist, right? So and we all more or less come from this polished cats and dogs culture. We are heavily surrounded by it. And we have to eventually get to the other side there, to the day of the spiritualist. And yes, I mean, these 5 points which Prabhupada is mentioning one by one, they are the pillars of spiritual culture. And in materialistic life and its culture, they are all completely neglected and lost and forgotten. It's very clear. In a culture where sense gratification is the all in all, it is a culture of exploitation, right? It is a culture of abandoning each other, actually, right? So husband abandons wife, wife abandons husband, parents abandon the children, children abandon the parents and the grandparents, all for the sake of sense gratification. Everybody is abandoning each other, right? That's what material life is all about. And, of course, old people and children in such a culture are seen to be a burden. They're pushed aside, off into the old folks' home, somewhere hidden in the forest, or off to the daycare center. At the age of 6 weeks, mothers are dropping off their babies so that they can enjoy life and have their career and earn lots of money. These things are going on. So there's no talk about protection. No, no. It's abandoning each other and exploiting each other. Right? And Prabhupada is mentioning protection of the women. So, you know, in a culture, it's very clear, in a culture where sense gratification is the all in all and sex life is the most topmost way of enjoying life, women naturally become an object for enjoyment. Naturally. That's what the whole culture is promoting. Right? So, of course, there's no talk about protection of women. And cows, of course, again, it's a culture of exploitation. So, of course, the cows are simply used for making money, business. while she's giving milk, all right, and then we feed her hormones and antibiotics and this and that, so she gives more milk. And then when the suitable time is there, she gets slaughtered, yeah? And the bulls don't give milk, all right, let's slaughter them immediately, yeah? So it is a whole culture of exploitation. And, of course, the brahmanas, in a culture where sense gratification is the all in all, of course, the brahmanas become corrupt. Right? They also want to take part in the whole race for sense gratification. And, yeah, they lose their whole brahminical position. And, I mean, they're not only meant to be protected, but they're also actually meant to protect everybody else by giving their aloof brahminical advice. So this is all lost and forgotten, of course. Right? And also, brahmanas, initially, they don't have any interest in power, position, title. But in a culture of sense gratification, it's all a race for competition. Who enjoys most? So naturally, the brahmanas become corrupt. They take part in the whole thing too. And like that, all these 5 points of protection, they're lost. Right? But in spiritual life, in its culture, where sense gratification is being minimized and where God consciousness and self-realization is the center, there we find very naturally these 5 points being the pillars of civilized human life. Right? So actually, spiritual culture is actually, it promotes, I'm even using this as my motto here, promoting a culture of care. For some years I was a member of the GBC Strategic Planning Committee for Devotee Care. But then after 5 years I realized actually it's all in spiritual culture. This is Krishna's system for care. So if I just concentrate on propagating and preaching about spiritual culture, that is Krishna's system. No need to reinvent the wheel here or something. It's all there. It's all in the Bhagavatam. It's all in the culture. So that's why I thought, all right, let me just move on and now I'm not part of the committee anymore. But I am, preaching about devotee care. And by the way, just in case this is not clearly understood, the seminar we are having, it is actually all about devotee care. Because there's often so much shallow understanding what devotee care is. It has become a pretty, a catchy term in ISKCON. Because we realize we have lost so many devotees over the last 40, 50 years because this care has not been there. But then very often we understand things in a very superficial way and we think, oh, if somebody is in a hospital and I bring him prasadam, oh, I'm doing devotee care today. But no, this is just a tiny external little aspect of devotee care. The real foundation of devotee care is giving and accepting shelter, sheltering relationships. That's the foundation of devotee care. And interestingly, yesterday we had the introduction session and we could immediately see it connects completely with the topic of culture. Because in materialistic culture, nobody wants to give shelter. Everybody is too busy and too self-centered. And nobody wants to take shelter. Everybody is too puffed up and thinks they know it all already. And they don't need that. And they're self-made men and so on. And they work it all out by themselves. So in material life, nobody wants to give shelter. Nobody wants to take shelter. Whereas in spiritual life, it's the most natural foundation to any more meaningful relationship. There's always somebody giving shelter and there's always somebody accepting shelter. That's what makes a relationship meaningful. And we were saying yesterday, if this is not there, this platform of giving and accepting shelter, then our relationships easily become Harry Bowl relationships. Haribo, Haribo. Oh, Haribo, nice to see you. Haribo, Haribo. And, but not more than that. It doesn't go much deeper than Haribo, you know? Yeah, so this whole topic is a perfect introduction to this topic of culture, because it becomes very clear that how much we are conditioned by our surroundings, by that propaganda we are constantly subjected to, because that is so subtle but yet so deep. We might be thinking that, yes, we have our opinions, but actually no, we are just a product of our environment, really. Yes. And not so easy to shake this off. It actually requires some whole paradigm shift. Yeah? Even in regards to, let's say, old people and children being a burden in material life, we take this attitude into our spiritual practice, into our communities. Let's be honest. You know, we experience, these old folks, they've done their thing, so now it's our turn here. You know, we don't realize that in spiritual culture, the old members of society are most valuable members. They embody life experience, self-realization, wisdom. They are the ones who guide, who share, who affectionately uplift. Yes. They're very important members. And same the children. You know, we bring this mood into our communities that, the children, they're just in the way and they disturb my spiritual practice and my fun here in the temple room. And, you know, well, I can't wait until they're grown up and then I finally can get back into spiritual practice. This attitude we are carrying. And our children feel this, of course. And, of course, they will not like Krishna consciousness very much, you know. Yeah, I've received all these insights in Bangladesh. There, the children are the center of communal life. Yes. It's amazing. I mean, nowhere else I have seen this as much as in Bangladesh, you know. Even the brahmacharis, they really involve the kids and let them take part in things. And, you know, they have that vision. This little boy, he's our future brahmachari. And once one of my right-hand men there, he was at that time 28-year-old brahmachari, he said to me, "Our children's programs are more important than our student preaching at the university." And I was impressed. This is 15 years ago, then I didn't have the insight so much. And I said, "Oh, really? Why is that?" And he said, "Yes, as a child, that's when we have to plant the seed. Once they're already the students, then already they had so many, you know, mundane impressions and some scars and. But child, that's where we have to give all attention and mold them and plant the seeds." 20-year-old brahmachari has such vision. My God. You know, I was impressed. I don't think we hear this anywhere else in the world of a 27-8-year-old brahmachari. You know? Yeah, in Bangladesh, each temple has a solid kids' department, you know, where they do all exciting things and learn verses from 5 years onwards and devotional art and instruments, and they have some competitions and performances when it's their big day and it's a whole thing. Yes. Yeah, so in any case, I mean, we have a long way to go. And, yeah, this is how I see, you know, our Vaishnava culture. It's Krishna's system which he gives us in order to give stability and harmony to our lives so that we can wholeheartedly develop our relationship with Krishna. And there's stability there. And all our social problems, like divorce, single motherhood, neglected children, violence towards women, child abuse. They are all global reactions for not following Krishna's system. Because in Krishna's system, they don't have much place. Yes, but our disease is that we think our modern systems are better than Krishna's system. We think, Krishna's system, old-fashioned, outdated. Who will accept Krishna consciousness if we present Krishna's system? You know? Yeah, that's what we think. And that's why we are facing the same, you know, global reactions. I mean, here Prabhupada just talks about the global reaction of decreased lifespan. But my God, there are so many other global reactions also. Right? That's only one small one. Or the social problems, you know, they're the ones we are battling with every day here. Shortened lifespan, if we go back to Godhead at the end of the life, oh, well, that's not so bad. We go a little earlier, you know. but all these other disturbances we are facing, they create so much more instability in our life. Right? So, and according to my humble understanding, we need solid, systematic training and education in these things. We have to become conscious first. As Prabhupada always said, in order to become Krishna conscious, we have to become conscious first. And if we train our devotees, how are things going in material life and its culture? How are things in spiritual life and its culture? Then we can empower our devotees to make a conscious decision. How much of which culture we want in our life? But as long as there's no training, then we just go with the flow. We just think, oh, well, everybody out there is doing these things and we can't, you know, be left behind here. We have to keep up with all the modern developments. Okay, let's just go along with it. You know? That will be the result if there's no systematic training. And yeah, well, if we want to become true introspective sages, we have to turn our back to materialistic life and its culture. It has to become our night. We have to lose the taste for it. And yeah, we have to be willing to swim against, you know, the modern currents. We can't be too worried, you know, what everybody says about us or something. Well, of course, there's a way, there's a cultured way of preaching culture. But yeah, first of all, we have to be convinced ourselves, and then we can offer something to others. Okay, time is up. Is there some question or some comment or some doubt or correction or anything like that? Yes, Prabhu.
I have a comment. I'd like to thank you for an amazing, wonderful class. And I'd like to thank you for coming here. And I'd like to thank you for dedicating your entire adult life to so sincerely practicing, following Srila Prabhupada's instructions, because there's no way you could speak like that if that wasn't the case. And I'd like to congratulate you on how successful you've done that. I felt like I was listening to a genuinely spiritually enlightened person. And a further comment is, about 20, 25 years ago, somebody did a survey, maybe it was Gallup, I don't know who did the survey, but the survey was, who are the happiest people in the world?
Mm.
And
my mother told me that. I didn't even hear about it, but yeah, she told me.
In Bangladesh. When I read the survey, I said, what? How could Bangladesh be the happiest people in the world? Because it's practically the poorest country in the world.
That's right.
But, you know, you gave the insight today on how explanation of how that's possible.
Yes.
Thank you.
And I also want to express my invitation to you, if there's anybody who would like to experience a visit to a different planet, then please come. It will be my greatest honor and pleasure to take you for a tour. Actually, I was the one who invited Bhajan Rai Maharaj a few years ago.
Yes.
to come to Bangladesh, and I took him twice for a tour. And yeah, he had a pretty good time there. So if any of you is up for a little adventure, then please let me know. And I'm pretty well established there. I've been there for 18 years quite regularly. You know, in the beginning I used to spend 4 months per year there, So I know the right strings to pull, so it will be a nice experience for you. And yes, and if I'm there, it would be great to get your association while I'm taking you on a tour. Yes.
Thank you, Mataji. In Prabhupada's purport, out of the five points that he made,
yes,
on top of that was the brahmanas.
Yes.
Taking care of the brahmanas. So just by being, trained properly as a brahmana or Vaishnava, can resolve all the other
yes,
deficiencies.
Yes.
So if somebody will have to say, well, we already are following the system the Prabhupada taught us, you know, following the program, doing this, chanting, going out, reaching, one for outreach. So it can become ritualistic.
It can be what?
It can become ritualistic, even though you do all these things, because it's not flourishing, it's not coming out as it should be. So this will be like an additional thing that you're mentioning, or is?
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain?
Yes. According to my humble analysis, we are not quite there yet in living our philosophy. Because as I was saying, that's how culture comes about, by practically applying it, by living it. Naturally, the culture comes in all aspects of life, of daily life. But just the fact how foreign spiritual culture is for us sometimes shows that we are not there yet. We are not there yet. Because, I tell you frankly, I think we do like the day of the materialist. Yes, we like it. We attached. You know? We like that taste and we hang on to it to a greater or lesser degree. Actually, I hope you don't mind. I hope it's not inappropriate here. But I have put a book together on this topic. Spiritual Culture, Krishna's Divine System. Where I'm addressing all kinds of points, also in relationship to these five points, especially about protection of woman, chastity, what highly important role we women are playing in spiritual culture. We are meant to be the power of inspiration. Yes, it's highly important, but this is all lost and forgotten. You know, actually, the role of us women is so important. If this is neglected and misunderstood, whole humanity goes down the drain. And that's what we're experiencing in Kali Yuga. So if you're more interested, get one of those. You have it? Really? Okay, I won't ask where from. So there was another quick question or comment.
Hi, Bo Mataji. Thank you very much for coming. We see each other every year in Europe, but it's the first time, like you said, you're here in America. Very, very, very wonderful to have you here. One point you made in that they may bear a little more explanation. You said you were giving credit to the Muslim government of Bangladesh for keeping the Vaishnava culture intact. But our experience sometimes flies in the face of that statement, in that they are known to be quite intolerant, even of the Muslims who oppose the current government. If you dare to be a journalist there and write something that opposes the governmental view, you can get killed. It's happened. We've seen it in the news many times. So many journalists get killed in Bangladesh. And in general, around the world, it seems that the Muslims are not so tolerant of other religious organizations, other religious paths that don't jive with theirs. So how can you explain a little bit more how you think the Muslim government is preserving Vaishnava culture?
I mean, first of all, I dare say sometimes what we hear here in the Western world, what's going on in Bangladesh, it's a little distorted. You know, it's a little pulled out of proportion. All right, so there is some things going on, but my God, I feel much safer in Bangladesh than what I feel in Europe these days, you know, with all this terrorism going on. And whatever happens there between Muslims and Hindus, it is not on the religious level. It's all it's politics. It's all power and control and possessive, you know, ness over property and. Bangladesh, Dhaka, has the biggest Rath Yatra outside India. Three big carts rolling through the main street in Dhaka. And they do it very traditionally, the going and the coming back, Rath Yatra. The mayor of Dhaka, he's a Muslim. He's the chief guest there. He gives a whole eloquent speech glorifying ISKCON. There's a whole big police parade, you know, protecting the Rath Yatra. They're meeting with the devotees to coordinate before, you know, the whole security of the Rath Yatra. They're all Muslims, you know. So, and I've attended a lot of big public programs where there was dignitaries, Muslim politicians, dignitaries, they're glorifying ISKCON. It's not as bad as what we are hearing here. Yeah. In fact, in Bangladesh, every Hindu knows about Mahaprabhu. Every Hindu. It's very different than West Bengal, where 50 kilometers outside of Mayapur, nobody even knows who is Mahaprabhu. But Bangladesh, every Hindu knows. And not only every Hindu, all the more educated Muslims also know. Because when they study Bengali literature, they hear about Mahaprabhu because he was so influential in the Bengali grammar. And they also learn about Mahaprabhu as being a social revolutionary who frees the suppressed Hindus from the caste system. So, all right, they don't have the understanding that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But they highly respect him, highly. So, you know, Bangladesh is not as fanatic as the Middle East or something. No, I've personally met so many cultured Muslims who have high respect for our society and our preaching work. ISKCON is very prominent in Bangladesh. We have so many properties, we can hardly even take care of them all. And we have hundreds of brahmacharis. It's brahmachari loka. Seriously, yes. Yes, I mean, it's paradise for brahmacharis. So if you ever want to, you know, relax a little bit more, then come to Bangladesh, you know, because of the culture being so strong, the atmosphere is not so charged with all this agitating vibrations. It's completely different, you know. So it's even compared to India. It's a different planet. When our brahmacharis take their congregational Bangladeshi members on a South Indian tour visiting the holy places, if I ask them afterwards, so how was your trip to India? They say, yes, it was all right, but I wouldn't want to live there. True Western mentality. That's what they say. Yeah, for India is for them the West already. Yeah. So, and obviously, this comes because of the Muslim government, you know, that just keeps our culture so traditional. All right, there might be a few, you know, a few disadvantages there and a few rough spots there and the whole thing. But I see it as perfectly Krishna's arrangement, you know, that actually Mahaprabhu appeared in Sachi Mata's womb when she was in Bangladesh. And only 2 months before Mahaprabhu appeared, they moved over to Navadvip. You know, Srivas Thakur, Advaita Chaya, they all come from what is today Bangladesh. So I think this is perfectly the Lord's plan, that part of Bengal is kept, you know, in such a confidential cultured way there, and it also keeps people out. Even our ISKCON devotees are not attracted to go there. They think, oh, this is Muslim country, they kill the cows, or better we don't go there. So that's another reason why it even protects our culture even more. If everybody would go there, you know, then it would be very soon like Mayapur. No offense, but, you know, I've heard that comment already. Mayapur is not a place for Brahmacharis anymore, you know, but Bangladesh is. So, all right, Mahaprabhu appeared in West Bengal, so everybody can easily go there. But the real confidential nectar is definitely flowing in Bangladesh, I can tell you that. So please, please come and taste it. It will be my greatest honor to receive you there one day. Yeah, I hope you will. Okay, time is really up. Thank you so much for your kind attention. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveda Bhaktivinoda ki, Guru Premanandi, Hari Hari Bol, Hare Krishna.
Yeah, reserve one for me, please.
I'll bring some tonight.
But you have to sign it.